I've always taught my kids, what you want, you manifest. And going back to his college days, he has a sign, I will play in the NFL. And, you know, not only playing, I mean, he's cementing his legacy. And, you know, like the sophomore slumps and all that, like, we're not worried about that. Like, boy puts too much time and effort. He really loves this sport, like, to where he would compromise other things just for the love of the game.
Jaden Daniels' mother talking about her son and, you know, the idea of a sophomore slump. Is Jaden Daniels ranked correctly at number 5 overall on the ESPN list of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, as voted on by coaches, front office execs, and scouts, NFL people? Number 1 was Mahomes, number 2 was Allen, number 3 was Joe Burrow ahead of Lamar Jackson. That has sparked some discussion and debate as to why Burrow is ahead of Jackson. I'm fine with that. And then Jaden came in 5th. Stafford is 6th. Herbert is 7th. Goff is 8th. Hurts is 9th. And Baker Mayfield is 10th. You know what I've noticed in looking at this list? Honorable mentions, by the way, C.J. Stroud, Jordan Love. Others receiving votes in order: Murray, Purdy, Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Tua, and Bo Nix. So basically the top 18 quarterbacks listed and voted on by front office execs. A couple of things I've noticed. Number 1 is, just in a couple of years, there's much more uncertainty about the depth at the position in the league. Now, I say uncertainty instead of there isn't depth, because some of these players are so young. You know, guys like and have just started to come in their own. Like, Baker Mayfield had an excellent season. Baker Mayfield may be surging towards being maybe not elite, but top 10. He's 10 on this list. Stroud and Love, I think Stroud's shown it. Love, I think, has shown it at times, but there's still some uncertainty there. Kyler Murray up and down, and then guys like Tua and Bo Nix. I mean, Nix had a nice rookie season, but how much of that was system-oriented? By the way, I think Tua's got a lot to prove, man. I think this is a big year for Tua coming up. I don't think I have an issue at all with this list. I think after the top 5, I would have put the top 5 in that exact order. I think Stafford certainly is in the conversation for, you know, top 5, but right after that. And I like that Hurts didn't come in until 9th, because I think talent-wise, I still would take Stafford, Herbert ahead of Hurts. Maybe Goff and Hurts are 8-9. I might take Hurts ahead of Goff, maybe. Goff's so reliant on system and surrounding. But Mayfield coming in at 10, I'm a big Stroud guy, and I like Jordan Love's talent as well. You know, that's the top 12, and then Murray was 13, Purdy 14, Prescott 15, Rodgers 16 at 41 years old, Tua, and then Bo Nix. So there you go. So we'll stick with Jaden primarily, unless you want to weigh in on Jackson and Burrow, because I think a lot of people think Jackson is too low on this list at number 4. I'm okay with it. I mean, I know you could say the same thing about Josh Allen. Prove it to me, you know, by winning the Super Bowl or getting to the Super Bowl, something that Josh Allen hasn't done either. But there's a big difference, or there has been. Josh Allen's played out of his mind in the postseason. Lamar has not. He hasn't. All right, 301-230-0980. Is he in the right spot, or is he too high? I mean, if you think he should be higher, have at it. Let's start with Earl. Earl in Burtonsville. Earl, go ahead.
How you doing, Kevin? Good to talk to you this fine Monday morning.
How are you, Earl?
Doing good. I think Jaden should be number 3, right after Mahomes, Allen, and then Jaden number 3. I mean, he's just a fantastic quarterback. He's single-handedly has turned my Washington Redskins franchise around. I've been a fan all my life, and I just can't believe we actually have a franchise QB. I think he should be high. I think he should be the 3rd spot.
So you would have him behind Mahomes and Allen?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have Burrow 4 and Lamar 5.
And Lamar
no
5.
No question about it.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Earl.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate good
Yeah, appreciate the call. Let's go to Aveen. Aveen, Jaden's spot on ESPN's rankings of quarterbacks. This voted on not by analysts, not by guys who cover the teams, but by coaches, front office execs, and scouts. Jaden's fifth ahead of Stafford, ahead of Herbert, ahead of Hurts, ahead of Goff, behind Mahomes, who's one, Allen, who's two, Burrow's three, and Jackson's four. Is that the right spot, or should he be higher or lower? Let's go to Aveen. Aveen, go ahead.
Hi, Kevin. I think five is the right spot. Those core four are kind of impeachable based on their resumes. But I have to say, if we're being honest, Jaden was better than Mahomes last year. And I think an interesting hypothetical is, if Mahomes was our quarterback last year, would we have been as good? I don't think so. But his resume is unimpeachable. So I understand putting in number one. And even going into this upcoming season, I'm just wondering how many quarterbacks we would rather have just for next season who we think our team would be better with. And I'm not sure there's any. I mean, I think there's quarterbacks like Allen who we would be just as good as. But, you know, Jaden is, I think, the most valuable quarterback asset in the NFL right now. We don't know his ceiling. His ceiling might be, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time. He had the greatest rookie season of all time. So that's just how I feel about Jaden. But I think they nailed this list. I think the league has been on top of the Jaden Daniels stuff for a while. I think it was coming out last year during the combine that he was way ahead of, you know, May and everybody else. And he was 1A and 1B with Caleb Williams. And how about, and just on a side note, how about the GM of the Bears getting an extension, the guy who wouldn't even interview Jaden Daniels?
It's insane.
It's probably a little premature.
Yeah,
but
Ryan Poles.
I think Williams is kind of a bust. I mean, there's some alarming stuff about him with his sacks and his inaccuracy downfield. I mean, and they give that guy an extension. But I think they've been on top of the Jaden Daniels stuff. I think they're right in saying, you know, they're not concerned at all about a sophomore slump based on how he projects. I'm glad they gave both Goff and Mayfield in the top 10. I think both those guys are underrated. I think Hurts being nine is just kind of a Super Bowl winning thing. I mean, even in the description, it said he needs a steady running game, and you don't want him passing that much.
Yeah, but the problem is the guys behind him. It's hard to drop him much further. You know, I think Stroud. I think Stroud and Love are going to be interesting to watch this year. I think they're both super talented. The first thing you said, though, Aveen, I'll disagree with that. I agree with almost everything else you said. I think that with Mahomes, Washington would have been right where they were. Mahomes is special, man. He does everything required. He had a great defense the last couple of seasons. I mean, they won 15 games last year. He still threw for nearly 4,000 yards. You know, I forget what he rushed for. Obviously not Jaden rushing totals. But I think Mahomes essentially does what's required to win. I think he's gotten to that point. And so on this team last year, if Mahomes had been the starting quarterback, I think they would have won 12 games and two road playoff games. I really do.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, my only comeback would be, you know, we saw when, you know, his offensive line wasn't playing that well in the Super Bowl. And, you know, Jaden played against the St. Eagles defense and his offensive line.
He did.
A lot of games was, you know, overmatched.
Yeah.
But also, just want to know what you think about this. I think you've talked about Jaden's ceiling before, and I know it might sound ridiculous to say, but I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a quarterback like this before who's so young, disadvantaged as a pocket passer, and is already like an all-time athlete as a scrambler. Like, he had one of the greatest scrambling seasons in NFL history, just efficiency-wise, last season. And to me, just as a pocket passer, his comp is Tom Brady, like just how he looks, like how methodical he looks going through his progressions, how everything looks slowed down.
Yep.
And he doesn't have like this big violent, you know, arm release, like throwing release. And I think people take that away. They think he doesn't have a strong arm because of that. And that was kind of similar to Brady early on in his career. I don't know. I just think they both play it at slower motion.
He's
that's kind of my thought.
Thanks for the call, as always, Veen. Great job. No, I think when in one of the quotes, the quote that I read twice, but I didn't read the back half of it, when the NFL coordinator who prepared for Daniels last season, so I'm assuming a defensive coordinator, he says, the kid can read coverages, throw with accuracy and touch to all levels of the field, just as dangerous as Lamar and Josh Allen with his legs, and has a clutch factor to him because his team already believes that if he has the ball with a chance to win, he's going to find a way. If he repeats anything close to his rookie year, he's no lower than number three on this list next year. Look, anything can happen. We've seen it in the league, but what we saw last year seems like it is something that can be sustained as long as he is healthy. Like we said many times during the season last year, this is probably the weakest supporting cast he's going to have. And they've already upgraded, at least offensively, with the likes of Laremy Tunsil and Deebo Samuel. They got to get Terry into the fold. We'll be watching very closely this week. This is the last full week without training camp, all right? This is the last full week, the 14th through the 18th. Rookies report on the 18th. Veterans report on the 22nd, so a week from tomorrow. So the last full week without, you know, training camp football at the very least to talk about, and preseason games not that far away. Terry will be back. I feel confident about that. And I just don't think that what we saw last year, if there was something where it was like, well, they can pick on that, they can figure that part out. He just does everything so well. G from the shop. G, is Jaden at number five placed correctly, or is it too high on the ESPN list?
Nah, he perfectly placed right there. I can live with that. And it just showed that ESPN got a lot of respect for what he did in just 1 year.
It's not ESPN. It's the coaches that they polled and front office execs. That's the importance of this.
They done seen enough in 1 year to put him at number five. I understand why they put Burrow.
Stroud was at seven last year after his great rookie year.
I don't care about nobody behind him, because Jaden is perfectly placed. In front of everybody that he in front of, he's better than them. A blind man can tell you that, but the people that's in front of him, I do have a problem with Lamar Jackson not being number two. You know what I'm saying? That's recency bias. He got two MVPs. Josh Allen only got one. And if it wasn't for Zay Flowers having brain farts in one of them playoff games, he probably would have went further in the playoffs.
Maybe.
I don't like how they be.
He didn't play great in that game, though, against Kansas City.
No, but sometimes people don't play great, and you need other people to step up. And Joe Burrow, if you look, there's no way Joe Burrow should be in front of Lamar Jackson in any way. He got two MVPs. His record is not even comparable to Joe Burrow, damn near 500 in his career. Man, Lamar Jackson, man, 74-29, man. All he do is win. Josh Allen got
except in the postseason.
So what Josh Allen got in the postseason?
He's absolutely torched it in the postseason. I mean, he's had games that are epic, classic games. Some of them ended up in losses, like last year, and the 42-39 game or whatever it was. And by the way, Joe Burrow's been outstanding in the postseason in his two shots at it.
He has. But Lamar Jackson is the reason they are in the postseason. Point blank.
That's true.
And the dude's numbers, man, is ridiculous. The passing yards is close to Josh Allen in the same amount of years. He got 2,000 more rushing yards than Josh Allen. He got two MVPs, four-time All-Pro. Lamar Jackson got to get over the hump to get everybody's respect, and then he probably still wouldn't get their respect.
No, I disagree.
I don't know why.
I totally disagree with you on that. I think people are waiting for Lamar to bust through, not just make a Super Bowl, but really play immaculate football in the postseason, which he has not. Once he plays at that level, even if they get beat by Patrick Mahomes in a 45-41 game, you know, like Buffalo has a couple of times, Josh Allen's got 25 touchdowns and four picks in the postseason. He's been unbelievable in the postseason.
No, I'll give you one. That year, that 13 seconds against Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes did to Michael Jordan, I'll give you that one. But, like, Dan Marino ain't getting no Super Bowl. I'm looking off of what I watch, and Lamar Jackson should be number two, Josh Allen should be number three, and Joe Burrow is right at number four because he got to a Super Bowl. My man Jaden ain't get to a Super Bowl yet, but that's coming soon. So I think Jaden is perfectly placed, but the Lamar Jackson disrespect is outrageous. I don't care. I don't care.
Let me just say something. You know I love Lamar, and I've rooted for Baltimore so hard to get over the hump the last 2 years. And look, that two-point conversion could have been caught. Didn't mean they were going to win the game, but they should have at least been in overtime against Buffalo last year. But they had two turnovers. The dude's got 10 touchdowns, 7 picks, 10 turnovers total. He has not played well enough when the biggest games were there. He admitted it last year, G. He said, I get tight in these games. Joe Burrow and Josh Allen have not done when they've had their shots in the postseason. They've been tremendous. He hasn't been tremendous in the postseason.
But see, that's why I love Lamar. Lamar reminds me of people that I used to play ball with, Paul. He took the blame. He's a leader. He can put it on himself.
That's why he's easy to root for.
And he's one of the most beautiful football players to ever watch play, period. He might be the greatest athlete to ever play quarterback. But man, this is ridiculous, man. Everybody can't win a Super Bowl, man. Lamar Jackson should be number two, two-time MVP. The numbers is ridiculous.
That's the bigger debate. What's interesting, and I got to run, but thanks. I'll talk to you later. What's interesting is that's a much bigger debate than Jaden being at five, from what I can tell in the aftermath of this list coming out earlier this morning. One thing G said, and they wrote it in the first line in describing Jackson, who came in fourth on this list. Jackson is the most breathtaking player in the game. I would say that Jackson and Tariq Hill are the two most electrifying players in the game. Like the most feared with the ball in their hands. With that said, Lamar Jackson has not played well enough in the postseason. Josh Allen and Joe Burrow have. And Jackson's also, like Burrow, been hurt and has missed some time, including the season in which they made the postseason a few years ago, lost to Cincinnati in the playoffs. I think, honestly, if you told me I can start the next five seasons with a quarterback on this list, I think that Mahomes and Allen would be the top two, and then I'd go Jaden over Burrow and Jackson. Let's go to our guy Robert in Annapolis. Robert, go ahead.
Hey, my guy G preaching in the pulpit, isn't he? Oh, my guy, so
he's
I'll let
best.
That one go. I would put Jackson over Burrow. But the reason being, I like the dual-threat quarterbacks, and that's what you guys have. And I think five is about as high as you can put them at now, at this point. But, you know, the argument you use about Jackson in terms of his playoff performance, you could use a similar argument against your guy in terms of lack of productivity over a long period of time, over the time frame. You know, you're taking 1 year and magnifying that.
Which guy?
Daniels.
Daniels has played one season.
Okay, you're critiquing Jackson because he hasn't had the success in the playoffs at this point that he has had in the regular season. But Daniels has had success for one season. So, in other words, you don't have a big enough picture of – I think he's like a song on the
right,
top.
But I don't have any negative. I don't have anything
that's all.
That skews me towards I'm not sure yet. He checked off every box in 1 year. It's totally unique. That happened in one season, I'll grant you that.
But again,
but Lamar's had five seasons in the post, five shots at it in the postseason.
He's like one of those songs in the top 10 from years ago. He's number five with a bullet. You know, he's on the rise. So I do say if he continues on with what he's been doing, he'll move up. But I got to put Jackson over Burrow because of the versatility. I'm going to say this. when you're a defensive coordinator or a defensive player, I don't think there's any player that you look across the line and fear as much as you fear Lamar Jackson. I just that's what I bet their thinking is. So,
you know, there's a scene in that, and I talked about it earlier on the show because I watched it this weekend, Quarterback on Netflix. There's a scene after a week two game between Kansas City and Cincinnati. That was a great game, if you recall, 26-25. There was a late pass interference call that allowed Butker to kick the game-winning field goal, and the Chiefs beat the Bengals 26-25 at Arrowhead. And Steve Spagnuolo comes off the field, seeks out Burrow and says to Burrow, other than our guy, you're the best there is. And that's a high compliment from one of the best defensive coordinators in this era. He basically said, other than our guy, Mahomes, you're the best that there is. And I think you can make that case for Burrow at his best. You can. Burrow's...
Kevin, look who Burrow is throwing to.
I understand that.
The other guys are throwing
That's fair.
To.
That's okay? fair.
All yeah. right, so Kevin, who would you take on your team if you didn't have Daniels, Burrow or Jackson?
Burrow.
Okay.
And you know this. I'm a Lamar fan, and I'm rooting for Lamar. I want him to get over that hump because he's such a great young man too, beloved by the organization. But if you told me, I would go the order they went in: Mahomes, Allen, Burrow. You know, right? I put Daniels in front of Burrow if we were going over the next 5 years. But yeah, Burrow, well, because okay. Lamar tightens up in the postseason. He just does. Well, he admitted it.
Well, he's still got a few years. He's no Joe Flacco in the playoffs. How about that?
Well, that's right, true. Flacco delivered like almost no quarterbacks delivered in the postseason over the last 20 years.
My man had the stones of iron. All right,
oh, my God, did he have big ones. Huge when it mattered the most. All right, I'll talk to you later. Those of you on hold, we'll do another quick segment, 301-230-0980. ESPN's annual list of top 10 by position, voted on by coaches, front office execs, and NFL scouts, had Jaden Daniels fifth best quarterback in the NFL. Did they get it right, or is he too high, or maybe too low? And then the real controversy was Burrow ahead of Jackson at three. Burrow came in three behind Allen and Mahomes, and Jackson was fourth. You can weigh in on that if you want. If you're on hold, stay there. We do have a line open if you want to weigh in. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. So this from All Flats. Why do we care about any of this BS? Because it's July 14th, All Flats. I think that this has been such a conversation since the season ended. And it is interesting because, like I said, two things kind of struck me while going through this list this morning. The ESPN top 10 QB list, where the front office execs, the coaches, and the scouts all vote for the top 10 quarterbacks in the game, and Jaden came in fifth on the list. Do you think that's correct, or do you think it's too high? Number one is just how it's kind of changed in the last few years, and a lot of that is because of some of the greats retiring, you know, a few years back, Brady, Rivers, Roethlisberger, etc. I'm forgetting somebody, I think. But the depth of the position doesn't seem to be there, which is why, you know, when Jalen Hurts comes in ninth, Baker Mayfield comes in 10th, it's like, well, who are you going to put in front of him? You're going to put, you know, Jordan Love at this point in front of him? Kyler Murray? Brock Purdy? Prescott? You know, Stroud and Love were the honorable mentions, and then it was Murray, Purdy, Prescott, Rodgers, Tua, and Bo Nix after that. Neil writes, the highest ranking was 5 and the lowest ranking was 10, so not sure how he ended up at number 5. I didn't see the actual votes. Maybe they broke it down. But I would assume that if he was at 5 and that was the highest ranking, that the top 4 just got all of the, you know, top 4 votes, basically. And it seems pretty obvious that the top 4 are the top 4. Jaden, I know some of you want to put him there now. And by the way, I wouldn't have much problem taking Jaden in front of almost anybody except Mahomes and Allen if we're having that conversation. But the top four are Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, and Jackson. After, you know, right, as of this moment, this time next year, as one NFL coordinator said, I think, if he has a year anywhere near last year, he'll be no worse than three on this list. All right, let's finish up some calls here. Bones has been on hold for a while. Bones, is he ranked in the right spot, or should he be higher or lower?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Kevin. Shout out to
Sure, Bones.
Matt. They got him in the right spot because, you know, he only played one season, right, and he was a rookie, and he produced a whole lot, right, and I appreciate the spot that they put him in. But I'm going to tell you this. He gets some receivers like Burrow's got, and he gets some receivers and tight ends like Mahomes got and like Josh Allen got. Oh, man, he's going to be dangerous. He's going to be very dangerous. And then, Kevin, one more thing, man. I beg to differ, right? The Wizards, they're going to be cooking. They got some athletes on that basketball team. I'm surprised at you, Kevin. You know basketball, man. I'm telling you, man, they are going to be cooking. Watch out. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Thanks. Peace. Appreciate it. They're just too young to be cooking next year. I hope that 2-3 years down the road they're cooking. But even with Middleton and McCollum and Marcus Smart, he's still on the roster, right? I just don't see more than 22, 23, 24 wins again. I certainly don't think they're planning on that because they want one more shot at a very high picks, plural, next year in the draft. Let's go to Sean. Sean's been on hold. Sean, go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I think it's you know, reasonable to put him in at five. I think as well as he is, I think that's, I mean, just.
Oh, I got you back, Sean. Sorry, I lost you there for a sec.
Oh, you're good. I think that you could have put a guy like Hurts or Stafford in that five spot too. I honestly think that Stafford probably would have been beating Hurts if it was on a neutral, non-snowing field last postseason, but that's for another discussion. I think that the Rushmore is kind of hard to kind of crack right now with Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, and Burrow. Burrow could have won an MVP last season. They gave it to Allen. It could have been Jackson. Jackson, it just doesn't have that poise in the postseason, which is why I think they put Jaden Daniels at five. I think that his poise, his ice in his veins where he just doesn't feel anything from minute one to minute 60. It's just, you know, he's smiling on the sideline. He's joking with guys, even when they're down 10 and people are like, well, that's ridiculous. It's like, because he just doesn't feel it. And you'd want that on the sideline. You want a guy that you can, one, believe in, and two, that just doesn't feel that pressure. I mean, somebody mentioned Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco didn't feel any pressure. That's why he won a Super Bowl. I mean, Eli Manning didn't feel any pressure in the postseason.
Yeah, there are
That's
guys like that. Yep. So, they just ice water in the biggest moments. And by the way, Jalen Hurts has that.
He does. If you look at some of the stats of somebody that's been in two Super Bowls across the board, he has some of the best stats for playing, I guess, 120 minutes of football. And he didn't play basically the fourth quarter last game because they didn't need to.
Something you said at the beginning is true. Like, if Cincinnati didn't give up 27 points a game with arguably the worst or certainly one of the two or three worst defenses in the league, and they win, let's just say, instead of 9, they win 11, like in there solidly in the postseason, Burrow, I think, would have had a really good chance to win the MVP last year. Really good chance.
And that's without, I mean, a respectable run game.
Exactly.
He's doing it with now. Yes, he's doing it with two of the best. I would say probably two of the top eight receivers in the game right now with Higgins and Chase. But
Cincinnati had the 30th ranked run game in the NFL last year. 30th.
Yeah. When you're looking at Chase Brown to be your lead back, you're not cracking the top 25.
Yeah, I think Brown's a little bit underrated, but I think it was more the O-line. And look, they're not trying to run the football a ton either with what they have to throw to in Higgins and Chase. Sean, thanks for the call. Really good call. Let's go to Tom in Columbia. Tom, are you okay with Jaden at number five, or would you think, or do you think that's too high or too low? Go ahead.
Well, I think the rankings are based on a body of work, but the NFL is so season to season now that it's not like the days of the 70s and 80s where you have these dynasties or teams that come back composed to win again. And I think that Jaden Daniels is perfectly suited for this new modern era NFL. I remember calling you last year, maybe the first 5-6 games, and the guy plays the game. He might have the best processor in the game, if you look at it from that perspective, processing the game.
He does.
And then you add his, physical talents and that quality that I call feel for the game. He just has a great feel for the game. So I think when you look at it, get away from stats and get away from the Madden or fantasy mentality. And I cringe every time somebody says he needs better receivers. A better line is what he needs. Any quarterback will flourish under a better line in this league. It's not a defensive-minded league like it once was, but these two maxims still exist. Run the ball effectively on offense, stop the run on defense, and then everything else takes off with these modern-day offensive coordinators. But I think his intangible is, one, he's proven he can play in bad weather. That doesn't bother him. And the second, I think the most important is his processing ability. And I look forward to watching him with that. So I'm telling you right now, it would be a big push if you said right now going into camp, you can have any quarterback you want. The only one that I might sway me is Allen. But when you look at the intangibles and the upside, Daniels has got to be on everybody's list. If you had, like you said, if you're looking 5 years down the road, it's got to be Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Daniels, I think this time next year we're going to be talking about him with Mahomes and Allen. Mahomes and Allen are truly special, and they've proven to be that. And we can look at Mahomes' numbers, but when we watch the games and he has to deliver, he does it over and over again. Thanks for the call, Tom. Good call. Victor in Bowie. Victor, go ahead.
Yeah, I think Jaden is where he's supposed to be. However, I actually wouldn't have Burrow in the top five right now, only because of who he's throwing to. If you want to look at body of work, I would probably have Stafford at four. And then you can't go wrong really flipping.
This isn't a body of work. This is heading into kind of next season.
Body of work does come up in these conversations.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying
is. Last year does.
Yeah. Jaden, because I could put Jaden at number four. But I think Jaden is at a good spot. But, you know, it's just that Stafford, I would be probably just as scared as anybody as opposed to Joe Burrow if they had the ball last. Plus, he does have a Super Bowl under him. And there have been, you know.
He beat Joe Burrow in the Super Bowl.
Right. So, you know, Joe Burrow has the best duo in the league. That's my opinion. I think they're better than the Eagles. You know, and he's had them for years. And the beautiful thing, like you said about Jaden, was yes, processing. When the play breaks down, he knows what to do. He knows how to at least move the chains, and he's accurate. Now, my issue is when I hear people start saying or forgetting about Mahomes. Mahomes didn't have a defense the first year he won the Super Bowl against the 49ers. He had Tyreek. But he had Tyreek, and right after that, Tyreek left. Tyreek had more years with Alex Smith, to be honest with you. So it wasn't like they had the greatest, you know, receiving core either. And also, they did a study years ago that when they process or they look at their heart rate, Mahomes has that clutch where he just is calm, and in that moment does not kill him.
Yeah.
That's the knock on Lamar, and I've heard everyone say that, which is recently, unfortunately, he hasn't produced in that moment. So I can kind of see how someone might put Josh over him. I probably would put Lamar too, you know, but I'm not mad that, you know, Josh is too. Josh is great, you know, but also I can knock Josh and say, well, look, you've had Stephon Diggs for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, but he didn't have much last year.
No,
they made it back to the championship game.
He proved to me last year that he did what Mahomes has done. If you really look at it, Mahomes won his last two Super Bowls. He didn't have even a top 10 receiver. Yep. Juju Smith-Schuster was his best receiver when they beat the Eagles.
Yeah, Mahomes. I think Mahomes and Allen, there's a little bit of separation, but I think right now the top four, and I don't mind the order, as I said. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I think that the order is spot on the way I would do it. But I get the debate for Lamar. To me, it's real simple. Burrow hasn't won a Super Bowl. He's been to one. Josh hasn't been to a Super Bowl either. But both Burrow and Allen have been lights out as playoff quarterbacks. Allen in many more opportunities. Burrow's only been to him twice. Burrow last year was a sensational quarterback, but it's true. He also had the best tandem in the league, but not a great running game and a terrible defense where every time he stepped on the field, they were required to score. In some ways, the same way Jaden was, the same position Jaden was in. All right, those of you who I didn't get to, I apologize. Maybe we'll come back to this next hour. Bobby Blanco from Masson will join us. We'll talk about the Nats draft, which included, I think, a surprise at number one overall. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980. Nats could have gone with Ethan Holliday, shortstop, third baseman. Could have gone with Cade Anderson, pitcher from LSU. But they went with Eli Willits, a 17-year-old high school player from the state of Oklahoma. That seemed to surprise some, but it was not, I don't think, a draft with anywhere near a consensus on who the top pick should have been. Bobby Blanco covers the team for Masson. He joins us right now. You can follow Bobby on X at Bobby_Blanco. Bobby is a Terp, and he is a Gonzaga Purple Eagle as well. So, last night, they're on the clock, number one overall. What percent chance would you have given that they would have called out Eli Willits' name?
I would have given that a smaller percent chance. I think there was a group of five or six guys that had an equal, well, not equal, but like made up the percentage pie, if you will, of who they could pick. And I think, you know, Cade Anderson and Ethan Holliday definitely took a majority of that pie. But the fact that they went, let's call it the field, those other four or five guys, is not that surprising, I don't think. Just because, like you said at the top, there wasn't a clear cut number one. Like, there was no Paul Skeen, Dylan Cruz. There was no Jackson Holliday, even though his brother was some had him as the top prospect in this draft class. There was no clear-cut number one. There was a group of six guys, and I think as it got down to it, you know, we heard less and less about Ethan Holliday going 1-1 to the Nationals, and we heard more about Eli Willits coming up. I'm not surprised that they took one of the prep bats. Since Mike Rizzo was dismissed a week ago, I thought all week that it was less likely they were going to take a pitcher and they would go bat or a position player and one of those prep bats. So you could say maybe a little surprised that it wasn't Ethan Holliday, but I'm not surprised too much that it ended up being Eli Willits, even though I know a lot of people are or were.
All right, two things on – well, three things. First is this. Do you think the fact that Willits will be cheaper to sign Cade Anderson and Ethan Holliday, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're Boris clients and they're older players, obviously. Do you think that could have factored into the decision at all?
I think it definitely did. I don't think we'll ever hear anyone from the Nationals come out and say that publicly, but I do think that it is part of this new regime, and new regime meaning the Danny Haas and Brad Selick, who they hired a couple of years ago. This is only their second draft, but that is part of their mojo in terms of going into draft. I think you could argue, should you take that approach when you're drafting 1-1, that's a different conversation, but it is part of their strategy of maybe going a little underslot in the first round so you can sign guys that fall out of the first round in the second and third round, particular high school players that have strong commitments to top programs. I do think that did play a role that, you know, Willits will not cost as much probably as Ethan Holliday or Cade Anderson. And you're right, both of those guys are Forest guys and Willits is not. So I think that does play a role and a factor into it. I think that's fair to say.
All right. Second question on Willits. Do you think that this pick changed with the firing of Mike Rizzo?
And that's another question that, you know, I tried to get an answer out of when we spoke to the guys from the Nationals war room last night. They didn't really say, you know, of course they always said that, you know, we've honed in on him for a while. He was one of our top guys. I don't think that Mike Rizzo leaving, it's hard to say. I do think that if Mike Rizzo was still here, there was a higher chance that they would have taken one of the pitchers because Mike Rizzo loved starting pitching. Mike Rizzo always said you can never have enough starting pitching, and I think a guy like Cade Anderson would have been, you know, a little too tantalizing for him to not to pass up at 1-1. So when Rizzo left, I thought it was less likely they would take a pitcher and more likely that they took a position player.
Is drafting Willits an indication that this is an even longer-term approach to the rebuild? I mean, is there less sense of urgency given that the time frame for him to get to the bigs is much longer?
I think that's a fair question because, right, he is only 17. When we spoke to him last night, he mentioned one of his goals, now that he's been drafted, is to reach the major leagues by the time he's 20, and that would be in 2028. That's 3 years from now. So that's a long ways away. So, you know, a lot of the conversation leading up to the draft was an argument for one of those college pitchers would be, hey, they could contribute at the major league level next year. And Willits has a much longer timeline because he's so young, because he's so raw. So I don't know how much that factored into it, but it does kind of add to the story and paints this picture of, yeah, maybe they think that they are a little further away than they had previously thought at the beginning of the season.
All right, we're talking to Bobby Blanco from Mass, and actually a couple more questions on Willits. Does this say anything about C.J. Abrams and his long-term presence on this roster?
It's hard to tell. I mean, you know, it's not like when you draft a quarterback 1-1 in the NFL and you know that guy's immediately going to be your starter and whoever is already, in place is going to be moved to the bench. If you're looking at that timeline, like I just mentioned, that Willits would be, if he makes the majors by his 20, that'd be 2028. That would be C.J. Abrams, last year under contract. That would be, he'd be heading into a free agent after that season. So I don't know if, maybe they do come to a long-term deal. You know, they have now 3 years to decide if they want to make C.J. Abrams a contract extension offer and make him the shortstop of the future. But if not, then they have this kid now at that time will be hopefully ready to step in and be their everyday shortstop and maybe the shortstop of the team. So I don't know if it says anything in the immediate about C.J.'s future with the team, but maybe it does down the line when as he gets closer to free agency and Willits is closer to his major league debut.
All right, beyond some of the reasons we talked about, including maybe even upfront expense, why Willits? Tell us about the player.
Yeah, I mean, he was all along, this is not just coming from the Nationals, he was all along kind of projected as the best overall hitter in this class. The bat to ball skills are elite. He doesn't really strike out. He stays within the zone. And he just uses the middle of the field really, really well. And he is an elite defender. He is projected to stay at shortstop. Ethan Holliday, a lot of people have him projected moving to third base, a corner outfield spot, maybe even first base down the line because he's built more like his dad, just that big, hulking, natural, slugging power hitter, whereas Jackson, his brother, is obviously more of an athletic up the middle infielder and has been able to stay at short second base for the Orioles. And Willits is more like that. He is going to stay at shortstop. He is athletic enough. His defense is elite. His glove is elite. He's got range. He's got speed on the base pads. And I think what talking to the Nationals brass last night, the main thing was like all of their analytical view of him and their scouting view of him kind of merged and said this was the best player in the draft. He was the best hitter and the best fielder, and that's why they took him 1-1.
All right. What did they do in rounds 2 and 3, and was any of the, going much younger in round 1 a setup for what they might spend in round 2 and round 3?
Yeah, so in round 2, they took Ethan Petrie, who is an outfielder from the University of South Carolina, just a pure power hitter. He probably projects more to move to first base or designated hitter a long time, long term in his career, but he was hitting just absolute tanks with the Gamecocks. I think I saw a highlight last night circling around that he took Paul Skenes like 400 plus feet when he was like a freshman at Carolina, and Paul Skenes at LSU. So he has pure natural power, a lot of swing and miss though, and the defense isn't really there. So you're getting a natural power hitter there. And then in the third round, they got a high school pitcher, Landon Harmon, who we spoke to this morning from Mississippi. He's considered one of the best prep arms in the country. A lot of people have already linked this to when the Nationals drafted Travis Sikora back in 2023 in the third round, was the top prep pitcher of that class as well. were able to kind of, I think, I'm trying to think of their second round pick. Oh, it was, there was Jalen Cruz and then, Yo-Yo Morales. And then they went big on Sikora. That's a little different because I think they're going to try to go under slot with Willits and then go over slot for Harmon. Harmon did say this morning that he's going to sign with the Nationals. So he pretty much already knows what his offer is going to be and he's going to sign it. So I would expect that to go over slot value. The slot value for that pick in the third round was a little over $1 million. So he'll probably get more than that to sign him away from his commitment to Mississippi State. But elite fastball, profile is a lot like Travis Sikora, really tall kid, really lean kid. Still has to like kind of grow into his body again coming out of high school, but could be an elite arm in this farm system pretty soon.
I looked this up before the show. I guess I was a little bit surprised, but I probably shouldn't be. But James Wood tonight is plus 400 to win the home run derby, and it's Cal Raleigh, I think, is plus 300, and then O'Neill Cruz with Pittsburgh is like between the two. So do you give him a decent shot of winning the derby?
I do, and I think because my whole thing with James in the derby tonight is his swing is so effortless, and you're taking so many swings in such a short period of time in the derby. I just wonder if a guy like Cal Raleigh is going to go so hard early on and then just get worn out and get tired. And we've seen this happen in past derbies where guys just go try to, you know, hit as far as they can early on in the derby, and then they get tired at the end. And with James's swing, it's so effortless. He can go the opposite way with a simple swing. He's homered at Truist Park before. The wall in right field is tall, but it's short. And then the wall in left center field, where a lot of his balls naturally go, is shorter. So I think if he stays within himself and gets his nice, easy swing off pretty easily, he could save some of that energy. And also, he hits balls really fast, right? So, like, if balls get out quickly, he'd be able to save some of his time in his round to kind of reset and rest up and not get too tired too quickly. So I do give James a pretty good chance tonight.
All right, last one, and I appreciate the time, and I appreciate you being available based on when I asked you. Thanks for that. Bobby's great. So the trade deadline, we're, what, 16, 17 days away from it. There's been some discussion that Mackenzie Gore could get dealt. This is, like, essentially the same time that Soto was dealt. Do you see that happening?
I don't. I just that would be a very bold move for Mike DiBartolo to do, you know, a couple of weeks into this job. He's, you know, I think everyone with the Nationals obviously right now is kind of managing, coaching, playing, and general managing, scouting, whatever, for their jobs. Because, you know, the Lerner family could decide to turn everything upside down by the end of the season. And I just think that would, one, take, you know, permission from ownership. I think ownership really likes McKenzie and views him as a long-term piece. And I think the Nationals themselves do too. So I don't think they think they are where they were back in 2022. I think they do see Wood coming along. They see C.J. Abrams coming along, obviously McKenzie. I hopefully getting a healthy Dylan Cruz back soon. So I think they see a younger core more solidified than they did a couple of years ago when they traded Soto to build this young core. So I that would really shock me if they decided to do that. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't pick up the phone and hear offers, but I would be surprised if they accepted one.
All right. The Nats have how many more picks today?
They have just, I think it's just, they have won every round. They don't have any extra picks. So they've already made a couple. So rounds 4 through 20 are today, and they've already selected another high school pitcher out of New York, a guy who throws heat but has some control issues.
Thanks, Bobby, for doing this. Appreciate it. Hope you're well.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Anytime. Appreciate it.
Bobby Blanco, everybody, at Bobby_Blanco on X on Twitter. Bobby covers the team for Masson. Zach Ertz had some very nice things to say about his current team. We'll tell you what he said when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. You can stream us on the team980.com or through the Odyssey app, and also you can check us out on our YouTube page. Subscribe it and like it when you get there.